To the south, castled Kokru, fields of sorghum and rice, both pale and dark, red for martial glory, white like proud Rapa, black as mournful Kana. The crowd cheered especially loudly after this verse about their homeland. To the west, alluring Amu, the jewel of Tututika, luminous elegance, filigreed cities surround two blue lakes. To the east, gleaming Gan, where Tazu's trades and gambles glitter, wealthy as the sea's bounty, cultured like the scholar's layered gray robes. Walking behind the singers, other soldiers held up long silk banners embroidered with elaborate scenes of the beauty and wonder of the Seven States. Moonlight glinting from snow-capped Mount Kiji, schools of fish sparkling in Lake Tututika at sunrise, breaching crubins and whales sighted off the shores of Wolf's Paw, joyous crowds lining the wide streets in Pan, the capital, serious scholars debating policy in front of the wise, all-knowing emperor. To the northwest, high-minded Ha'an, forum of philosophy, tracing the tortuous paths of the gods on Lutho's yellow shell. In the middle, ring-wooded Rima, where sunlight pierces ancient forests to dapple the ground as sharp as Fithaweo's black sword. Between each verse, the crowd bellowed out the chorus along with the singers. We bow down, bow down, bow down to Zana, Zenith, ruler of air. Why resist, why persist against Lord Kiji in strife that we can't bear? If the servile words bothered those in this Kokru crowd who had probably taken up arms against the Zana invaders scarcely more than a dozen years ago, any mutterings were drowned out by the full-throated, frenzied singing of the men and women around them. The hypnotic chant held a power of its own, as if by mere repetition the words gained weight, became more true. But the crowd wasn't close to being satisfied by the spectacle thus far. They hadn't seen the heart of the procession yet, the emperor. The white bird glided closer. Its wings seemed to be as wide and long as the spinning vanes of the windmills in Zudi that drew water from deep wells and piped it into the houses of the wealthy. Too big to be an ordinary eagle or vulture. A few spectators looked up and idly wondered if it was a giant Mingane falcon, taken more than 1,000 miles from its home in faraway Rui Island, and released here by the emperor's trainers to impress the crowd. But an imperial scout, hidden among the crowd, looked at the bird and furrowed his brows. Then he turned and shoved his way through the crowd toward the temporary viewing platform where the local officials were gathered. Anticipation among the spectators grew as the imperial guards passed by, marching like columns of mechanical men. Eyes straight ahead, legs and arms swinging in unison, stringed marionettes under the guidance of a single pair of hands. Their discipline and order contrasted sharply with the dynamic dancers who had passed before them. After a momentary pause, the crowd roared their approval. Never mind that this same army had slaughtered Kokru's soldiers and disgraced her old nobles. The people watching simply wanted spectacle, and they loved the gleaming armor and the martial splendor. The bird drifted even closer.
"Coming through! Coming through!"
2 14-year-old boys shoved their way through the tightly packed crowd like a pair of colts butting through a sugarcane field. The boy in the lead, Kunigaru, wore his long straight black hair in a topknot in the style of a student in the private academies. He was stocky, not fat, but well-muscled, with strong arms and thighs. His eyes, long and narrow like most men from Kokru, glinted with intelligence that verged on slyness. He made no effort to be gentle, elbowing men and women aside as he forced his way forward. Behind him, he left a trail of bruised ribs and angry curses. The boy in the back, Rin Koda, was gangly and nervous, and as he followed his friend through the throng like a seagull dragged along on the tailwind of a ship.